I have a question for Hector. It's the same question as yesterday, the same question today. I'm not sure that I really have understood all the elements of the answer. What is the general situation in Mexico? We know what the players are in Mexico, but at the level of the campaign, the concrete campaign around the summit of the Americas, what is going to be done in Mexico in general and specifically in Mexico? Are there any specific actions, activities? What type of mobilization concretely is being prepared in Mexico? Not just the coordination between the directives of the different groups, but concretely what is it that is being planned to do from the Mexican standpoint?
What we're doing in Mexico at the present time vis-a-vis the REMALC, which is the Mexican network in face of free trade. What we're doing is much larger than we used to be as alliance in Mexico and also at the level of Hemispheric Social Alliance. So we are participating at the present time. There are 12 different unions organizations in Mexico and three rural workers organizations and the urban movement in the shanty town, also the environmentalist networks, the human rights networks, among others. All those are part of this coalition. This that work with the Hemispheric Social Alliance. What we are proposing is something linked, connected to a meeting in September. In September 15, we have a meeting. Oh, I'm sorry. It's the action. The action is Grito de los Excluidos, which is excluded. Yell, I guess, but I'm not sure. In the main quarter place in the Zócalo in Mexico City. So there is going to be related to all the heroes of Mexico. Hidalgo is a independent demonstration for independence. In October, we're going to have a national forum towards Quebec with participation of people from all regions of the country to make possible more participation. So in November, we will organize activities in front of the business secretary, ministry, I guess, this. And also with the parliament. So we have new members in the parliament now. We'll see how they react to these initiatives. Actions in front of the parliament and in the Congress. The 2001 forums, radio program, and sectoral forums, women's unions, etc. So in a way that every social sector could discuss their participation in Quebec. Possibly by February, March, we will be organizing other actions and public institutions. And the idea is that the mobilization on Quebec on April 19, 10 April, important, is a birth date of Emiliano Zapata in Mexico. So perhaps in Mexico, most likely, we were going to be using that date since that is historically important. And the central main document of discussion will be related to the FTAA. And also simultaneous to the event in Quebec, we're going to have a national event in Mexico. Uh, there is also a connection between the social networks in Mexicans with the Hemispheric Social Alliance. I guess that...
This is just some thoughts on what's been said. I think it's very interesting, the community aspects of getting involved in our different communities with the people who are right next door to us, and also what Gaetan was saying about the division among the left militants. It's not to try and exclude people, because there is a lot of exclusion going on, and I think that we can't... what we're approaching ourselves are exclusions, so we can't fall into the trap of doing them ourselves, but there is a lot of exclusion. It's contrary to what we actually should be trying to obtain, and I think we need to talk about more about this, and I think we have to not practice exclusion. And I think also the metaphor that was very interesting, if we lose our way, we shouldn't go back over the same trail, but we should try new ways of doing things and to re-question and to keep questioning ourselves as to the different ways of acting and thinking and to find other alternatives and to stay open-minded, stay open. And I'd like to thank you all very much for your thoughts. They inspired me to a large degree. Another comment? Hector de la Cueva said something that seemed to me to be very important, which was how we've been knocking at the door to power several times, but without going in. And we've been always left out. There we have the Chilean experience with Salvador Allende, and that we were able to see. I was living in Chile at that time, and we were able to see how the economic power, with the backed up by military power, and with their international accomplices, were able to destroy a democratic process that had been elected by the people, in the case of Chile, and in other places, won through the spilling of people's blood, and to be able to destroy it at all the levels. I think that Hector had shown us one pathway that we must absolutely take up in order to be able to go towards with a surer pace, not certain, but surer, towards the creation of true alternatives. So one aspect that we always tend to forget and that we have left in the hands of our enemy for many long time, as long as we leave vacuums in the economic field, then we leave a great advantage to our enemy. And for our enemies, what I mean by this is that we have to invert, we have invest, we have to enter into the economic field the same way we're doing this with migrant projects, different experiments left and right. I said we have to network these initiatives together, to cooperate together, and to be able to defend ourselves, be able to support each other, to avoid this type of blackmail that Hector was talking about before. Otherwise, we won't be strong enough. It's only if we have the weapons and if we have, with votes, we not only take power, but we have to build up the economy from the very base, and then people won't be afraid anymore, because they will have the instruments that they need to defend themselves, for depend their everyday life and their bread. And this is what we do. I know I don't have a magic formula for this. It's not easy, but we have to work along these lines as well. Thank you. A question that I would like to raise, the question of the methods of struggle. As Gaetan was saying before, there are different sectors at the left that reject violence and that refuse the use of violence. And this isn't something that's not debated very much. It used to be something that we used to debate a lot, but now we don't so much anymore. And how we resist the violence of the state and of the powers that be, and with the everyday life of the people. I agree with Gaetan when he says that the left has to understand the fact that there are marginalized and excluded sectors within the population that don't have many alternatives other than violence to respond to the violence of the state. And this is expressed in the streets, and it's expressed towards the power of the state. And I think it would be very important to open up a debate on this subject. The relationship between exclusion and violence, why is this, does this happen? And what should be the position of the left and of the progressive forces along this subject? Because at this time, the Continental Social Alliance is a social alliance, more or less wide within some regions, but for instance, in its foundation, we've been said that there's a dual strategy involved here, that the lobby was very good, lobbying was very good, and negotiations at the official level was also something very good, but that the direct mobilization and struggle is part of the same overall struggle. So it isn't enough to lobby, it isn't enough to negotiate. They're going to need direct action, and we have to be ready to see these things within their context, because these are things that deserve at this time to be looked at. And I think the debate, this debate needs to be done, and I think that there are sectors that are having great difficulty in understanding that historically speaking, democratic development and progression of society at the world level has been done concretely, not only through legal means and institutional means, so that even the welfare state has been able to implement, has been the results of centuries of struggle, of pacific struggle, but also violent struggles. I guess another anecdote, as Hector said, I'm getting a bit mixed up here since I've been translating. In Toronto, in the demonstration for the Coalition Against Poverty, there were about 1,000 people present. And this ended up as a confrontation between the police and the demonstrators. But all the media talked about this everywhere. And then a few weeks later, 2,000 people got together at the same place for a vigil against those that had died due to the pollution of the water pollution at Walkerton. There was no coverage at all. Everybody had asked the demonstration to be peaceful, but when there was a peaceful demonstration, there was no press coverage at all, and nobody had anything to say about this demonstration at all. Good morning. I'm going to talk about perhaps another point of view, another approach. Oscar Romero, who was the bishop who was murdered in Salvador, says that there's no greater violence than to make somebody die of hunger. And in the perspective, I'm a theologian, and I've been in contact a lot with liberation theology, and within the vision that we have of this in Latin America, where neoliberalism is a predatory materialism. What some people call the very accountants of the devil. So there's something satanic that destroys and divides. Diabolo means to divide in its actual roots of the word. So I think that the spiritual side within our struggle is very important, so that, to not lose our courage, to not be afraid. And this is why the people in Latin America can stay on in the struggle, and it's because they have inspiration behind them. I don't want to go into the question of religious inspiration. I'm not talking about religion, but just about spirituality in struggle at all, to have a soul in our struggle, and this struggle which can support us, but particularly in the Americas, but in Europe as well, and we're with something that we can feed on when we see what happens in Seattle, and when we're going to see what's going to happen in Quebec as well. An idea, what I was listening to Sebastian, I don't see Quebec as the end of our struggle. This is just one battle within a much larger war, a war that is going to go on and which will be continue between those that put forward this world subordinated to their own interests and the respect of human dignity and in the environment. And perhaps just one more question before we can conclude. I would like to come back to the link of what was just said. At the level of a debate that we have to have among ourselves, that during each point of our struggle, we not lose our point of view and hear what Brian Dominic said at the beginning, not lose view sight of this, that we must open scope for our imagination. And I think within every action, every struggle, we have to ask ourselves where and how, and evaluating the forces that are present there, so we don't end up being dogmatic. Either for or against violence is not, we think, to look at each moment and each place and each situation, and it has to be a question of strategy whether violence is there. But because if we shut ourselves up within a framework of principles, either on one side or the other, the enemy is going to play with us the way we play with a ball, just kick us around. And that's what I have to say about the violence question. Thank you very much. That if these young people decide to be there, that they will be abandoned, that a system that over many years has brutalized them, that and a system that has criminalized them, that is trying to destroy them. And I hope that within the left movement, we understand that this type of justice, that criminalization of this population, isn't what we're trying to obtain. And we have to put a stop to the situation, go in another direction. If we have problems with this, go and talk to them. And if it occurs, work with them. It happened, you know, it's already happened. These are our young people, these are our children, if you like. We need to work with them. But what the debate that I keep hearing is that we seem to abandon them, work with the state to reject them and keep saying, denouncing them, he did this, he did that, to go to the media even before that and to denounce these groups. I think that this is something that causes a lot of problems for me, because these people have a lot to say about what the system has done to them. And yes, I would like to talk to them. I would like to. It's not going to be too complicated. What suggestions is something that scares me a little bit.
I'm getting a lot of discussions. Intellectuals are pondering it here and there in the same ways that always have been. And those of us who are organizing, those of us who are in the streets at demonstrations, have been discussing it in very different ways. Almost never does the issue of right and wrong come up. There's not much of a moral question in my mind when I see its effectiveness, its tactical innovation, it's how we can win. And in some ways, it is expression. It is young people in particular, in one instance, people of color, the disenfranchised economically, in another instance, or combinations thereof, it may simply be that people have, without even necessarily the tactical or strategic outlook, they have a certain amount of energy and passion going into this, and they need to express themselves in the ways that they feel match the levels of passion. So there's various reasons that we might engage in different types of violence, whether it's property destruction, which I hesitate to call violence, or whether it's violence against police, violence against delegates, whatever it's going to be. The discussion that we've had in the streets in the days before these demonstrations is almost always sticks around the tactical issues of, you know, not this concept of nonviolence that we talk a lot about in the U.S. To me, I don't understand it, and I think at this point we should be realizing that there is no such thing as nonviolence at these demonstrations. There's going to be violence, and the questions are which end of violence are you going to be on? Is it exclusively the receiving end, or is it some mix of receiving and giving? So these are the kinds of questions that I think are important, and I think that's where the debate should center. get it away from the philosophy and that sort of thing for organizers. I mean, that's how we look at things in practical terms. When we're doing well, we're looking at it in practical terms. And the philosophies are, again, for long periods of downtime, which we just, in some ways of conceiving it, we just had a couple decades of. So it's now time to get down to dealing with how we're going to actually behave in the streets. And I do not think that violence is always tactical advantage. I do think that winning is important, and that if violence means getting your ass kicked, as it does to a great extent in the U.S., it needs to be questioned. Our approach to it needs to be questioned. How well we can actually engage in violence. How well prepared are we for it? I don't think that organizations should be advocating violence unless they are also training people in self-defense and martial arts and various other things. If you have not taught someone how to take a beating, you should not teach them. You should not encourage them to take a beating, unless you can expect that they've already learned that quite well in their lives, which may be the case with organizations working on poverty issues. So I think that there's a certain responsibility that organizers need to take, which is to deal with other sectors of the left, to listen to their concerns. But at this point, I think the onus is on those other sectors of the left who are being, as Gaetan was mentioning, very critical of these young people who are in the streets and engaging in violence, or the poor people who are in the streets engaging in violence. The onus is on them at this point to finally listen to, and to probably in many cases remember what it was like a generation ago when they were the leaders, and when perhaps they were in the streets being much more militant than they are today, when they're in their lobbying rooms and their meetings and this sort of thing and wearing their ties. They need to start remembering what it was like and what the feeling is. And I think that what's got to happen and what's going to happen in the streets, what already is happening, is that young people, the new generation, is in a leadership role. And then when it comes to intellectuals and the people who are sitting on panels like that, I think within the next couple of years, these panels need to be dominated by young people who are listening to older generations on one end, but when it comes to talking about movements and talking about social movements as the topic, that it's going to be young people, that it's going to be youth, that it's going to be women and people of color who are really in those leadership roles and are really going to be able to express what's going on and where we need to go. So for young people, it's got to be listening skills right now and teaching skills in the near future that need to be developed. And what that is going to be expressed more and more is this passion and this energy and militancy that we're seeing in the streets. And finally, the left is going to have a chance to see it articulated. Most of those who are advocating violence or various other types of militant tactics are not the ones who are engaged in writing and the intellectual outreach and movement building on the broader scale, using mass media or using alternative media even. And I think that's going to change, and I think it's going to change the entire mood and character of the broader left, not just the radical or anarchist youth movements that are finally emerging.